Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, bringing you one of the special programs related to the dangers and tensions of the era of COVID-19. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Susan, and hello to you, the listener. Thanks for joining us. So, Susan, who will be our guests for today?
Well, after some inspirational insights from Carolyn Raffensperger, we'll talk with Rick Exner, long concerned with immigrant issues, and Nancy Heideman from the Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance, who will tell us about immigrants here in central Iowa, especially undocumented laborers and refugees, and what the pandemic and the economy mean for them. Then Susan Guiazzo is bringing us Vanessa Baker-Latimer, Ames Housing Coordinator, to tell us about housing projects during the crisis, available programs, as well as where to get help.
Well, it's good to discover more about how community is becoming stronger, even as we face the challenges concerning COVID-19. And it helps that spring is really happening, Susan. I've had reports of gray morels in southern Iowa, so the spring is coming upon us.
It's really unbelievable. Yesterday afternoon, it was actually 83 degrees, which is especially hard to imagine considering that it's supposed to cool off tonight, getting down to near freezing. But it was a lovely night last night with a full moon, and I guess it was a pink moon? Did you see a pink moon?
Oh, well, yeah, I saw a beautiful moon on the way to the station this morning, shining brightly, that's for sure. I think it's in close proximity to the Earth in this cycle. It always seems that the full moon will bring out a little change in the weather, but boy, it was sure nice yesterday. We'll take it while it lasts.
I guess maybe it's time to listen to what Carolyn Raffensperger has to say.
Okay, that sounds great.
You know, I'm fine and I'm concerned, and I would love to use this time to also interview you about some of your experiences dealing with the recovery of a species, since I think we're going to have to figure out how we're going to recover.
So, yeah, you're feeling during this reset that some elements of our culture are going to be diminished, possibly.
Well, what I worry about this morning is our connection and relationships in the natural world. That it's been easy to think about being one species and how much this has affected humans. But yesterday we found out that the tigers in a zoo in the United States, tigers and lions, the big cats, all tested positive for the coronavirus. And I think that that is a warning that is essential for us to pay attention to. That we know that this virus was probably transmitted from other creatures, bats or pangolins, and now it appears that we are transmitting it to other animals. And I was thinking about how we focused on humanity and not on our connections to our neighbors, all of our neighbors, both human and the creatures that share this world with us. So what I was thinking about were essential services and how we have a new appreciation for the first responders and for all of the workers who are stocking our food and the nurses and the doctors and the police and the fire departments and all of those folks who are picking our food and shipping it, processing it, how those have become the essential services in our world, and we had forgotten that. And it seems to me that we have forgotten the essential services of the natural world. Pollinators are essential services, essential for our survival. All of the beings and plants that purify our water in the wetlands, that as water flows through a wetland, you know, it comes out the other side cleaner. Yeah. We have forgotten these essential services of the natural world. And this morning, I'm concerned about those relationships and having underestimated them, underestimated and neglected our connection to the rest of the natural world, especially given the coronavirus presence in other animals now. Now the question is it going to jump to our pets, to cats, domestic cats? And domestic cats that are allowed outside, will the virus jump to deer, to pigs in Iowa? And have we set up the conditions in our very, very damaged state? Mark Edwards and others have said that Iowa is the most biologically damaged state in the Union. Have we set up the conditions for either health or for further disease in our state? And is it too late to begin to repair that? And focus on one species, the humans, and what this virus is doing to our fellow humanity. And I thought of your work restoring osprey to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And how I'd always thought, oh, you just restored the osprey. You just brought him back, and then everything was better. Oh. And I looked at how naive my thinking on that was, and I wondered what other things you had to do to prepare habitat, space. What had to happen before you could reintroduce the osprey? What was required to restore that species? I think that that will have clues for us in our species responding to this devastating virus.
And a couple things come to mind concerning the osprey. There was a habitat base that was modified, if you will, historically before European settlement. It's my understanding the native communities referred to the osprey as the fish hawk or the fish eagle. And there were the landscape was dotted with these pothole impoundments of water with fish, because ospreys are essentially a fish-eating raptor or bird of prey. And the large reservoirs and the remaining water that we do have, a lot of ponds in southern Iowa, was a habitat base that did not exist historically. So we felt that the osprey had a potential of occupying an enriched or a habitat base that previously didn't exist, and learning that the reason they weren't here, they would migrate through, they didn't nest here, is because of a natal site fidelity, or a fancy term for they always return to where they hatched and where they originated. So they weren't going to pioneer into Iowa. The ospreys don't necessarily pioneer in our lifetime. We have not seen the return on their own. So with the work of a lot of the county conservation boards and volunteers, there was some osprey relocation and appears to be succeeding. But that habitat requirement for other species like trumpeter swans, we were encouraged that there was, you know, trumpeting a cause for wetlands, but we were kind of growing wetlands. The wetlands were still kind of going in the opposite direction of there was fewer and fewer wetlands. So trumpeting the cause for wetlands for trumpeter swans seemed to be a good theme. And then kind of designating the ospreys as the ambassadors for clean water. You know, if you saw them, you were hopefully, especially young people, would make a link to the fish that they needed, and that the fish need clean water. We all need clean water. But so often it is a habitat-related situation in that you can't just bring wildlife and hope they make it. You have to invest mightily, or if the really important aspect is the habitat.
And our habitat has been so degraded that the emphasis on restoring our habitat, even as humans, which requires clean water, the same thing as the osprey and the trumpeter swan, that clean water is the foundation for health.
Right.
And then these right relationships to the rest of the creatures, the fish, the insects, the other aquatic living things, and the dry land things seem to be the same for humans as for trumpeter swans or for osprey. Yeah. And that seems to be an important idea, that we have to make our homes suitable for those future generations.
We are, I think, becoming reflective.
Well, one of the things people could do on their walks before the leaves come in is to map nests that they see on their walks, so they can see where hawks or other birds have nested. It's one of the great joys that I have in the winter and in the early spring, is looking at the old nests. I see a very, very large nest from my back window. It's sitting in the Munn Woods, and it must be a hawk nest. It's just so big. And it's not a squirrel nest. And my understanding, and you can correct me, is that the hawk nests are more likely to be made out of twigs, and squirrel nests are a lot more leaves.
Exactly. The nest for a raptor or a bird of prey quite often is a platform, and it kind of goes by their wing dimensions on how big they get. Eagle nests, 6 or 7 feet across. But those large structures that are flattened for Cooper's hawks or red-tailed hawks, I would imagine, is what you're seeing.
Knowing that those are your neighbors, those hawks or those robins or those hummingbirds are your neighbors, and that they're providing some of the essential services in our natural world, and that the hawks keep rodents down. The bats, the precious, precious maligned bats that eat mosquitoes, which also could, bring unpleasant diseases. Opossums, which eat ticks. These are part of the health of the system that we want to tend and nurture so that we can all survive, that we can all be healthy. If we take down these other species with us, even those who survive a terrible pandemic will live in such an impoverished world that I can't imagine how they would make it without all of these other creatures that give our lives meaning, provide these truly essential services in the world.
And I was asked recently, this story kind of brings to mind, sitting at Lake Laverne, and the Canada geese were close, and thought, well, maybe they're begging food, but they came close and they stayed close. And I've noticed my rabbits, it seems as if they were wondering, what's going on with, there's like 2 feet away. I said, possibly their intuition, which they have kept innate. Humans kind of have a way of downplaying intuition, but I feel that wildlife pick up on those vibrations, and I think they're possibly quite likely realizing we need them at this time, that they will rally to our benefit if they're not threatened, and if we're not putting out threatening vibrations, then I think they're here to help us. They know that we're carrying a heavy load, let's put it that way.
Yes, and I've been reading about the changes in the world because we've slowed down or stopped. I read that the seismic experts who measure the shaking in the world from earthquakes said that the jostling of the earth has been reduced dramatically. There aren't so many heavy trucks bouncing on the roads. There aren't all of these things that are jostling the earth. I once read that pigeons, and I'm assuming some of the other dove, larger family of birds, can sense vibrations through the earth. And they can see infrared. They have these skills that we can't have that may be giving them incredible information through those senses that we do not have. They must know something is going on because it's so much quieter.
Right.
I can't believe how much quieter my neighborhood is, and I live in a quiet neighborhood. But there aren't as many trucks, there aren't as many sirens, there aren't as many two-stroke engines that are screaming in the day.
Right.
There aren't as many, and right now no lawn mowing and not many leaf blowers.
Yeah. Right.
So they must, whatever their senses are, they must be able to smell better. We know that pollution interferes with the pollinators who depend on smell. And so the world must smell better without all of our exhaust.
And some of our listeners are going to relate to pictures of L.A. and Shanghai with dramatically decreased smog. They're seeing the stars for first time in decades, for instance. So there are nature has its ways of helping us through this if we utilize its beauty and its importance to us. And I think that is a very strong message that the Science and Environmental Health Network brings to the Ames community.
Well, my hope is that it's reciprocal, the basis of all wonderful and healthy relationships is reciprocity. And we have to stop just taking from the earth. We have to give back. The daily little things that we can do, you know, whether it's planting for pollinators, whether it's giving a safe space to those marvelous water birds and raptors, whether it's just not declaring war on the world.
Or dominance or control. Thank you so much, Carolyn Raffensperger. You're listening to Local Talk, and we're your hosts, Susan Franson and Pat Schlarba. We've been listening to Carolyn Raffensperger, director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. She was hoping that we would link wildlife and the COVID-19 effects on people and the necessity to include wildlife in our essential services.
I was very, very intrigued by what she was talking about, because I've noticed these stories, particularly about the big cats getting COVID-19. And she extended that in many significant ways. Mm-hmm. We are all connected. We are all in this together, not just all people all over the world, mm-hmm. but all species. Mm-hmm. And our next guests are telling us problems of immigrants and refugees, people among us. Regular listeners have met Rick Exner before. His concern for immigrants led him to work with a group developing community IDs that would be used for many of the identification purposes of a driver's license. If somebody was stopped, they could pull out their community ID and they wouldn't have to, police wouldn't have to check whatever records they had on file. They could just say, okay, now we know who you are. But today he's bringing with him Nancy Heidemann from St. Cecilia's Catholic Church to tell us about the COVID-19 Emergency Fund for Story County immigrants. Why do you think that immigrants need this special fund, Rick?
A lot of people are hurt in this current economic crisis, particularly people in the gig economy, people at the low end of the wage scale. So it's certainly true that the pain is widespread. Particularly, it hits immigrants. And for a number of reasons, they are more vulnerable because of where they live, because of their health conditions and all of that. But on top of it all, they're not even getting help from the government the way the rest of the workers are supposed to be getting. For instance, if an immigrant has been paying their taxes using an ITIN number because they lack a social security number, they've been paying in for presumably years, and you would think that they would get these $1,200 checks like everybody else, but no. As a matter of fact, even their citizen children aren't going to be getting the $500 checks that other citizen children are getting. Because of the precarious nature of their employment, they're probably not even able to apply for unemployment compensation. So we have some really desperate people here in our community who need some kind of help, and this emergency fund is an attempt to at least do a little bit to soften that blow.
I didn't get a chance to really welcome you, Nancy. Nancy Heidemann is part of a very, very active group that is addressing this. Nancy, welcome.
Thank you.
Could you describe at all the group that is connected through St. Cecilia?
The connection with St. Cecilia is that they are being the host for this fund, working as a clearinghouse for it. So this is a place that the undocumented community knows and trusts. And so the access to the application is available on the St. Cecilia website, and they can feel comfortable using that, and the funds will be distributed by St. Cecilia, and donations will go into St. Cecilia. So this is a program that they would feel comfortable taking part in. And I do want to point out, this is not a St. Cecilia program. This is a multi-denomination program, and the committee that are handling the applications and making decisions about the funds is made up of people from, I believe, five different faith groups and multiple organizations. that are active in the city. And we will be using the funds that are specifically set aside for the aid for immigrants, and looking at applications and making a decision on who will be able to receive funds and how much. And this will be based on the amount of donations we get in, as much as anything.
I happen to have a flyer on this, and I'd like to read the list of organizations. I think our listeners would be interested in that. The Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance, Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners, Ames United Church of Christ, Amos Ames, Bethesda Lutheran Church, Christ Community Church, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, St. Thomas Aquinas, and other partners to be determined. And it's convened by the United Way of Story County. By the way, the strong connection with St. Cecilia's is because for many years you've had a mass in Spanish. Isn't that right?
That's correct. There is a fairly large Hispanic community in St. Cecilia Parish.
I think you've done a very good job of describing the way it's gathered and what it's to be used for. How did you originally get involved in this? Was this because you were in St. Cecilia's?
I am part of the Social Justice Committee at St. Cecilia's, and I am part of Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance. I'm also a member of Ames Sanctuary Interfaith Partners, and in Amos Immigration, working with the community ID. So I have a lot of different connections, and I was I was contacted by United Way, by Annika Lundell at United Way, because she was my contact for the community ID. So that's how I got started in this.
Well, one of the things that I don't know whether Rick, whether you're involved in this or not, but one of the things that when I was talking with Nancy yesterday, she mentioned the issues with the South Sudanese refugees that they'd been working with through IRA, Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance. And those problems are really the kinds of problems that I think many, many people are having, which are just dealing with the system. So is there anything else that you would like to explain about the program, Rick?
Well, just to echo what Nancy said about this rather remarkable project that came together in about 10 days here. Nancy and I have been working together for years on through the Amos Immigration Group, and she mentioned the ID card project and other things that we've done with St. Cecilia to begin to build some trust with that community. But United Way gets a lot of credit for this fund, because they basically shook us and said, "Say, let's do something to meet the need here." And we thought, "Oh yeah, gosh, let's do that." And so I give a lot of credit to Annika Mundell at Story County United Way for getting us together. But we have been working together for years. Annika is kind of the spark plug on that. And at the moment, we have applicants and we have some funds, and we have many more requests than we can fill. As you can imagine, this fund is going to be a reflection of the amount and the kind of community support that we have here for our immigrant neighbors. And it's not going to succeed unless congregations and individuals and organizations make it succeed. to that end, they can take part in that by contributing through St. Cecilia Catholic Church, 2900 Hoover Avenue here in Ames, 50010, and just designate that it's for the Immigrant Emergency Fund. We're just seeing what kind of support we can marshal here in the community to help our immigrant neighbor.
Se fueron consumiendo las botellas, pidieron que cantara mis canciones, y yo canté unas dos en contra de ellas. De pronto que se acerca un caballero, su pelo ya pintaba algunas canas. Me dijo, le suplico, compañero, que no hable en mi presencia de las damas. Le dije que nosotros simplemente hablamos de lo mal que nos pagaron, que si alguien opinaba diferente sería porque jamás lo traicionaron. Que si alguien opinaba diferente sería porque jamás lo traicionaron. Me dijo, yo soy uno de los seres que más ha soportado los fracasos, y siempre me dejaron las mujeres llorando y con el alma hecha pedazos. Mas nunca les reprocho mis heridas, se tiene que sufrir cuando se ama. Las horas más hermosas de mi vida las he pasado al lado de una dama. Pudiéramos morir en las cantinas. Mujeres, oh mujeres tan divinas, no que el otro camino que adorarla.
This is KHOI Community Radio, bringing you Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiasta with her guest Vanessa Baker Latimer, the Ames Housing Coordinator, to tell us about housing projects during the crisis, available programs, as well as where to get help.
Hello, Susan.
So while we wait for Vanessa to join us, I can just tell you a little bit about what we've been doing as an organization. As you know, I try to come every day and just give updates on city responses to COVID-19 and what we'd like to see people doing and not doing. I think it's important to remember that we're all in this together. This is a community response, and that our actions do have effects on other people. Anyway, what we can do is stay off playgrounds because those have been closed. The skate park has been closed. Public buildings like the library and City Hall have been closed. But people are still working, and you'll see city employees out and about fixing water mains, working on electric lines, checking the parks. You'll see police officers about, firefighters are about. So city employees are out there doing their jobs, and it's just a little bit different the way that we're doing services these days.
Well, I'm curious, maybe you could, Susan Guiasta, maybe describe what her job description does entail for the Ames community.
What I do or what Vanessa does?
What Vanessa does, yeah.
Okay, so Vanessa's been the housing coordinator for the City of Ames for probably over 30 years. She's one of our longest tenured employees. She, over the years, has facilitated community development block grant spending. Since about 2000, Ames has become an entitlement community, which means that we reached 50,000 in population. And so when we reached that level, then we are able to access what's called Community Development Block Grant Money, or CDBG. And that money can be used for a variety of different ways to do improvement projects around the community. Some of the things that you'll see us using Community Development Block Grant Money to do are in certain census tracts, we can do street repairs. In all throughout the community, we can do what are called ramps, curb ramps. So people who you'll see those bumps at the end of a sidewalk. So visually impaired people realize that they're at a street and there's a gentle ramp. And then they know that they're going into a street, and then the bumps at the other side of the street show them that they've reached the other side. We are looking at a big project right now on a site that we call the old middle school site. I'm sure a lot of people remember. If you've been in Ames a long time, you'll think of that as the Welch, your high school site. Other people will think about it as just the Ames Middle School site. And it is 7 to 8 acres of land where we would like to put affordable housing. And so that project is continuing to move forward. There's a lot of really fantastic ideas on how that might move forward. We're exploring the opportunity to perhaps do what's called community geothermal, where one centralized geothermal system would serve an entire neighborhood of homes, which is something that's never happened in Ames. It's kind of a new concept, and that's a possibility. We don't know for sure that's going to work, but that is one possibility. But also just developing out a series of lots in order to offer affordable housing options for people in our community that want to buy into housing.
Well, that sounds pretty exciting. If a citizen of Ames wanted to apply for a block grant, some block grant money, or pursue the community geothermal projects further, where would they find information concerning those programs, Susan?
So they're all still in sort of conceptual stages. Agencies and organizations can go through the housing organization to suggest ways to spend down community development block grants. It's a very formalized process that is subject to agencies and subjects. If you want money spent in a direction, like to serve homeless people, or you can serve a population, it has to fit certain criteria. And Vanessa holds regular public meetings on how to spend the community development block grant money. And so that's very formal. The 321 State Street or the Welch Junior High School or the old middle school site, that project just continues to develop. We've been working on it for several years, so you'll just simply have to watch our website for new information. At some point, obviously, we would hope to reach the level where we would be taking applications, vetting people for approval to buy into the project, but we're not there yet. So we're still working on that.
And your website is City of Ames?
cityofames.org.
.org.
Uh-huh. And, yeah.
One thing I was curious about when learning that Vanessa had been in her position for 30 years, that's a lot of evolution with the concerning student housing. How are we evolving in that regard?
Student housing and, in general, the city tries to let the market direct how housing is purchased. So if there's a units, we often let the market kind of take that. When there's a need for single-family homes, we let private sector businesses take over to fill that niche. But what happens often in those cases is that you do get a part of the community that just cannot participate. Either they don't have deposit money to buy in, they don't have enough money to get a mortgage, or they have credit issues. And so those are the cases where the city will step in and partner with agencies like Habitat for Humanity another nonprofit to sort of fill those niches in there where we have a population that needs help and just needs maybe a temporary assistance to get into an apartment. There are lots of different housing programs that Vanessa, over her 30-year career at the City of Ames, has facilitated. There are things like loans to repair, forgivable loans to do home repairs. The whole idea is to keep people in stable housing, whether that be your own home, whether it be getting them into a rental unit, finding, it's really, I think Vanessa does a lot of matching and finding the appropriate housing for each person or family. Some other ways that you can find out information about city housing programs and just city information in general, again, is to go to our website, cityofames.org. And during these times, we really recommend that people who are interested in specific pandemic-related information go directly to the link, cityofames.org/COVID-19. That has no hyphen in it, just COVID-19. So cityofames.org/COVID-19 is the best way to get the most up-to-date information. We are sending out information at least every other day and trying to keep people updated on different updates and changes in the situation. On last Friday, we closed our kiosk in the entryway of City Hall. We had that open for people who needed to drop off oversized packages. It wasn't getting a lot of use. So if you need to drop something off to City Hall that, you know, needs an actual signature or it needs to be filed, we just ask that you call and make an appointment and we will accommodate you. Also, we have the drop box in front of City Hall, which is available to drop off your utility bills. That's always been there. And so that continues to be checked on a daily basis. The departments are around. If you need help from a specific department, feel free to call them because people are in the office taking calls. Another good way to stay in touch with city information is to check our social platforms. We have City of Ames accounts on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, as well as niche departments available on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And those include Ames Fire, Ames Police, Ames Public Library. So we have a lot of different ways that we are reaching out to people and a lot of different ways that we feel like people can reach out to us.
Okay, and Vanessa, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, it's so wonderful to see your face. Thank you for joining us.
Okay, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Susan Guiazda has given us a really good background into your work. And there are things we could talk about, but what is on your mind this morning? Maybe we'll just start there.
Oh, basically just navigating waters we haven't been through before and trying to stay balanced as much as we can as things change and evolve regarding how we're going to implement our programs and so forth. Been getting a lot of communications from both landlords and tenants, trying to help people navigate the orders that are out that talks about there's no, you know, evictions happening, there's all of that, and just encouraging both landlords and tenants to talk to each other, sign payment agreements for tenants who've been affected by the virus epidemic, pandemic, file for unemployment, and just try to pay something on their rent so that they don't get really far behind, and for landlords to work with them on this process as well. So that's been a lot of the communication the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure it has. And that information would be at your website, City of Ames. Is there another drop down that could be included with your website, cityofames.org?
Certainly. But I just been communicating, by phone calls. I certainly can put something out there to encourage the information I've been sharing with landlords and tenants. I've given them some links and I can put that on our website under housing, and you'll see something under what's new, just to say what to expect and what to try to continue to do during this time.
City of Ames / housing, and then what's new.
Yes, sir.
Well, as we've certainly witness the mushrooming of apartment buildings and in the city of Ames. Is that a part of your overview of the student housing apartment complexes?
No, sir. That goes through our inspections department. They manage what's being constructed, and they also manage the inspections and the process for getting approval to rent apartments in Ames.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. So what am I leaving out here, Susan Franson?
It seems to me that most of what Susan is talking about was our plans going forward for particularly the development of the Welsh site.
Yeah, Vanessa, if you could speak a little bit about where we stand on the 321 state, just to give people an update. And I'm going to have to beg off because I have another appointment. But Vanessa, I'll leave you in those very good hands of things that as we get through this pandemic and move forward on other projects we have coming up.
Sure. I'd be more than happy to give you an update on that. We are continuing the progress on developing the old Ames Middle School site. We're in the process right now of trying to get the area platted so that we can do lot layouts. We've been working with the neighborhood and the city council on getting that development done. So we're also discussing just recently with council and the neighborhood about making a portion of that site available for multifamily low-income tax credit apartments. And so we're still in the discussion of what that would look like and what progress we would need to do to make that happen. So part of the site would be single-family home ownership, both moderate and low-income housing together. And then one part of the site could possibly be, like I said, low-income multifamily housing for apartments for people who are low-income. So right now, we would start developing the single-family housing because we would have to make an application to partner with the developer to do multifamily housing, and that wouldn't occur next year. But we will be discussing that concept to finalize it with council and the neighborhood here, hopefully in the next couple of months, once we know about the COVID-19 virus status and when we can go back to having public meetings together. But right now we would have meetings virtually through the city council and so forth. So we're hopefully proceeding along with that development.
Excellent.
Yeah. Actually, there's a piece of breaking news I saw as I was looking at the Ames Trib, that they are now enforcing the 10-person limit on gatherings. So I guess that would that's sort of what you're talking about. You're going to have a little problem doing those kind of necessary meetings. Maybe you'll have Zoom.
Well, it's certainly a mechanism that everyone's using, and I think when people are sheltered in place and everyone's on the internet, sometimes, you know, connections don't work as well as they do, but we keep moving forward. HUD has given us permission to conduct virtual meetings, and the council is getting prepared to do, I believe, their first virtual meeting here coming up on the 14th. So it's just a way of life right now. And as we navigate that and get more educated about how to use it, I'm sure we'll perfect it and we'll get through this.
That's the spirit of these programs. We'll get through this. And there are a lot of wonderful people working on it. Thank you so much for coming in, Vanessa. Sorry that you couldn't be with us for a little bit longer.
Hey, well, as always, the next time, I just ask people to stay encouraged and continue to ask questions. Contact me by phone or by email if there's anything that I can help with. I'm certainly available to do that for our community regarding housing issues and so forth. And as we also navigate any future funding that may come through the CARES Act that will help people through this COVID-19 pandemic stage. So thank you for having me.
And thank you. And we'll have your link to your name with your phone number and email. So
okay, sounds good. You guys have a great day.
Yes, you
thank
too.
You. And Pat, before we close, I believe you have something you want to tell us about.
Well, let's go out this morning with a John Prine tune. John passed away yesterday from COVID-19, and John Prine was 73.
In the city, and me and Loretta liked living there. Well, it's been years since the kids have grown a life of their own and left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha, and Joe is somewhere on the road. And we lost Davy in the Korean War, and I still don't know what for. It don't matter anymore. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. Hello. Loretta, we don't talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen, and all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we both sing. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. We work together at the factory. But what can I say if he asks what's new? Nothing was with you. Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. Hello. If you're out walking down the street sometime, and spot some hollow ancient ass. Oh, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there. Hello.
It's a local talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts for today, Susan Franzen and Pat Schlarbaum. Other voices you heard were Carolyn Raffensperger, Rick Exner, Nancy Heidemann, Susan Gwiazda, and Vanessa Baker-Latimer.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Vicente Fernandez singing Mujeres Divinas and the John Prine song.
Hello in there. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow Become a Member donor button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.
Get to heaven, I'm going to shake God's hand. I'm going to thank him for more blessings than one man can stand. Then I'm going to get a guitar and start a rock and roll band. Check into a swell hotel. Ain't the afterlife grand? Then I'm going to get a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm going to smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm gonna kiss that pretty girl until the world, 'cause this old man is going to town. Then, as God is my witness, I'm getting back into show business. I'm gonna open a nightclub called the Tree of Forgiveness and forgive everybody who ever done me any harm. Why? I might even forgive a few choice critics, those syphilitic parasitics. Buy them a pint of Smithwick's and smother them with my charm. 'Cause I'm gonna get a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm gonna smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm gonna kiss that pretty girl on the tilted world. 'Cause this old man is going to town. Here we go, boys. Yada-da, skidada-ba-doo-boo-boo. Yada-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Skidada-doo-doo-doo. Ba-ba-doo-boo-boo. Da-da-da-da-ba-ba-ba-ba. Yeah, when I get to heaven, I'm going to take this wristwatch off my arm. What are you going to do with time after you bought the farm? Now I'm going to look up my mom and dad. And good old brother Doug, well, I bet him and cousin Jackie are still cutting up a rug. And I want to see all my mama's sisters, because that's where all the love starts. Miss them all like crazy. Bless their little hearts. And I always will remember these words that my daddy said. He said, "Buddy, when you're dead, you're a dead peckerhead." I hope to prove him wrong. That is, when I get to heaven, because I'm going to have a cocktail, vodka and ginger ale. Yeah, I'm going to smoke a cigarette that's 9 miles long. I'm going to kiss that pretty girl on the tilt of the world, because this old man is